My name is Colonel Ben Flynn, and I'm today's host of Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of Operations Group at the National Training Center, Fort Irwin, California. The Gauntlet brings you best practices from the Army's experts in combined arms operation. Our topic today is really to talk over an important factor that can improve the lethality of a unit as they conduct large-scale ground combat operations and some of the observations we've seen here at the National Training Center for Master Gunners. We have a crew of experienced Master Gunners here that have not only participated in an OC role, have acted as rotational unit Master Gunners, and then also provide coaching to them every rotation in terms of maximizing the lethality of units in a live fire scenario. I'll turn it over to my team to introduce themselves before we delve into our topic.
Sergeant First Class Ohano. I am the Dragon 40 Live Fire NCOIC and Operations Group Master Gunner.
My name is Sergeant First Class Aguilar. I'm the Dragon 3 Delta. I am the Tank Master Gunner for the Dragon team.
I'm Sergeant First Class Nee. I am Dragon 3B. I'm the Engineer Master Breacher.
Sergeant First Class DaCosta. I am Dragon 3 Chuck, the Bradley Master Gunner.
So what we'd like to do is first start with a little bit of what doctrine defines for what a Master Gunner does in large-scale ground combat operations and how we observe that here at the National Training Center. So I'll turn it over to the Senior Master Gunner at the National Training Center, Sergeant First Class Ohano, to talk to us a little bit about what we see in doctrine for the role of the Master Gunner.
The doctrinal role of a Master Gunner out of TC 3-20.31 is the Master Gunner is an institution trained and certified subject matter expert on direct fire weapons, weapon systems, ammunition, maintenance of weapon systems, and training programs. Master Gunner training specializes in a specific platform, but includes the key components of other weapon systems required to develop direct fire training for all weapons and systems assigned to that unit.
In your experience, how does that translate to Master Gunners in a large-scale ground combat operation?
This translates over to being familiarized with all the different types of weapon systems outside of your specific specialty. So as a Tank Master Gunner, Battalion Master Gunner, I was more familiar with the tanks and somewhat with the brads, but had to learn a little bit more about our mortars and all of our other equipment and entities that we had within the battalion. And that specifically what it's mentioning in the definition of the role and responsibility of a Master Gunner. You master your own platform, but you also have to have familiarization with everything else that's within the battalion, within the brigade. We noticed that when we're out here on rotation. A lot of Master Gunners, they do know the equipment, the personnel, but you can tell what subjects we're more comfortable with or what weapon systems we're more comfortable with than others.
That's an excellent point on their ability to combat multiply for the organization as we get ready for large-scale ground combat operations. We have the benefit of two very different classes of Master Gunners through here. So both Sergeant Aguilar and Sergeant DaCosta participated in gun school at different time frames. I'm curious on your perspectives, what did you see inside of Master Gunner school that is directly translated to the role of the Master Gunner inside of large-scale ground combat operations?
So I think one of the things that I learned a lot more about through Master Gunner school was direct fire control measures and the implementation of direct fire control measures when you're working through plans. It was more so for developing collective live fire scenarios as well as crew gunnery scenarios, but it also translates over to, I think, large-scale combat operations, like where can you kill the enemy at? Where do you want your engagement areas to be? Where can your weapon systems be most effective and most efficient at essentially destroying the enemy? So I think that was one of the good things that I took away, although there wasn't really a clearly defined role for the Master Gunner in large-scale combat operations.
So our First Class Aguilar, how about your experience?
I did go about 10 years ago, sir. It was mostly focused more towards the gunnery side of the house, what they do in garrison. However, I take a prime example of your vehicle and aircraft identification. It was important for us to know how their maximum effective ranges, where their weapon systems were for each individual platform or enemy aircraft, because you can translate that to large combat scale operations to give the commander an assessment of how far your unit should be retrograded back in order to essentially not be killed by the enemy. There wasn't really a whole lot of things implemented in the large-scale combat operations, but it's just being the subject matter expert for the commander when it came to applying your weapon systems and your platform.
And then in my experience, in observations both as here as an observer, controller, trainer, and then in battalion command and as a battalion S3, Master Gunner is really that one individual that has the expertise and trust within the battalion to manage a lot of training programs associated with employment of live munitions and systems, and then a lot of different aspects of resourcing and then providing timelines to commanders, in addition to what you gentlemen have described for applying weapons effects across the battlefield. Part of that, though, is the density of master gunners that exist right now. Based off our observations, we've seen different levels of manning across organizations. But for Dragon 40 Sergeant First Class Ohano, what is the current manning levels authorized for master gunners in our different brigade combat teams?
So in the brigade combat team, sir, the brigade itself is authorized 2 master gunners and an ABCT. That would be your Bradley master gunner and your tank master gunner. And then inside each of the battalions and squadrons, they are authorized 6 master gunners. The 1 battalion Kilo 8, 1 battalion J3, they are authorized another J3 in their scout section. And then each company or troop is authorized 1 master gunner respective to their platforms.
What are the current manning levels that we're observing for the master gunners? Are we healthy or do we need some additional support?
That's a tricky question, sir. When it comes to the actual duty title and positions of master gunners, when you look at what the unit actually has on hand, most are healthier than others. And the reason I say that is just because a unit doesn't have a specific battalion master gunner doesn't mean that they don't have 3 or 4 master gunners in the unit that are platoon sergeants or section sergeants completing their KD time. They're just dual hatting and taking on a little bit more than normal. Most have them there depending on the skill level as far as being in the actual company, you know, master gunner, MTO position. They're not in that position.
And I think it's a great point about where the master gunner resides. And if we want to harness some of their ability to be able to provide the commander direct fire control measure feedback, expertise on weapon systems, they need to be in a position and trained to execute that. And again, if they're dual hatted as a platoon sergeant, company first sergeant, it becomes more difficult. For Sergeant First Class Nee, he supports units out here that have non-traditional master gunner or master gunner roles in his job for both the engineer units and the sustainment units that execute live fire operations. In your observation, what are you seeing for that role of a master gunner in those types of organizations?
Sir, in my experience, most of those positions are not actually qualified to fill those master gunner positions. They generally put a senior leader that can still effectively help plan and facilitate those weapon systems within that organization, like the BEB or the BSB. We generally do not have master gunners, but we generally are filling those slots with senior leaders who are masters at their specific craft.
And I think that's a great point for the density described by Sergeant Ohano for people filling that role don't necessarily translate for skill identifiers in every organization we have. But there's still a requirement to be able to have that same level of expertise, not only in direct fire employment in large-scale ground combat operations, but in the training glide paths that support it. I'd like to talk a little bit about where are we seeing master gunners on the battlefield out here at the National Training Center? Positionally, where are they? And then what are they doing? Sergeant Aguilar, what's your observations for where master gunners are actually performing their duties at the National Training Center?
Pretty much, if I can break it down, like between RSOI, during force on force and live fire, which is the 3 main timelines in a rotation. So during RSOI, sir, I'm pretty much observing them doing all the logistical planning and make sure that the ammunition allocation has been set forward, that the vehicles are getting prepared for combat operations through their bore set of miles, their L-fasting of main gun rounds and Bradley zeroing, and making sure units are prepared to fire during live fire. When it comes to force on force, sir, when I've seen them more involved is in the battalion staff, specifically with the S2 and S3, giving them feedback, specifically the S2, about enemy intel, incorporating the Op4 vehicles into what their capabilities are, and advising the commander of what they should think ahead about when it comes to live fire. I've seen them employed in many different instances where they are helping the units continue to get ready for live fire and also continue to plan with the S3 and the S2, helping them exactly where to position certain things based on the capabilities of the vehicle. So they're very much engaged in the battalion planning, also doing the regular tasks of getting all the vehicles combat ready and ready to go.
Sergeant Ohano, how about what you've observed since you've been out here? You interact the most with the brigade battalion levels. Where are they positionally on the battlefield?
The most part, I would say at the point of friction. There's not a designated area where a master gunner should specifically be, but he should be where he's needed. If he's needed with plans to help facilitate MDMP, or whether he's needed out at the MCP, because LISCO, you're not always going to have an FSR to troubleshoot fire control systems. That's where he'll be helping out our maintenance teams with trying to get those vehicles back up, or if he needs to be at the Alphaz Zero range building combat power to prepare for live fire operations. It just depends, sir, on the unit, and that's one thing that I like seeing out here with these master gunners is their ability to be flexible and be where they're needed. So I would say it's not one specific place. It's more along the lines of just being ready to move to wherever they're needed. I've also seen them in the talks as well, helping out talk operations. It all just depends, sir, but I see them a little bit everywhere.
Doctrinally, as you described the role of the master gunner inside of our company doctrine and then inside of the battalion doctrine, there's very different roles that it refers to for the master gunner, some of which, as you're saying, in the armor and mechanized infantry company team manual, master gunner is responsible for being able to provide technical information to the maintenance teams, as well as providing the direct fire weapon system feedback that we already discussed, and advising the commander on the best placement for vehicles on the battlefield to provide the most lethal effect on the enemy, all of which are very different, all of which are positioned very different geographically, and makes it difficult for where do we place the master gunner, and most importantly, where and how do we train the master gunner to perform all those duties in a large-scale ground combat operation. We do have the benefit of Sergeant First Class DaCosta, who recently came through as a squadron master gunner inside of an NTC rotation. What did you find yourself performing, and where did you find yourself on the battlefield during your specific squadron rotation?
So during our force on force, I found myself in the talk working with plans, helping develop essentially the plan, especially having been through CAV leader, having been a platoon sergeant for about three and a half years, both in an infantry brigade combat team and now a heavy brigade combat team, and having been a master gunner. I learned a lot, and I essentially got to impact the unit with my knowledge there and kind of helping assist a younger staff, a newer staff with battle tracking, with planning direct fire control measures, identifying gaps in our reconnaissance. But then I also found myself as my threes gunner assisting with talk security or identifying new talk locations that afforded us cover concealment, but still the ability to talk via FM comms, which I found kind of difficult, just kind of jumping around. But then where I really felt like I was utilized was moving into live fire, and I was able to review all the direct fire control measures, things that we were missing in our plan as a squadron. And I was also able to have that dialogue with all of our troop commanders, both for the scout troops and for the tank troop, of things that they could add to essentially enable their fires. And it was something that we also kind of worked through during our collective live fire train up, was how do we maneuver without masking direct fires? And we got to essentially do that here at NTC.
That's perfect. In my personal observation out here at both the brigade and battalion level, the most effective plans have been the ones where the master gunners have been able to provide their technical expertise that extends beyond the specific platform they have, because you have the understanding of how to integrate different types of weapon systems. And that is the best thing I've seen is a E6 that ran a brigade war game master gunner, and he was the individual that kept everybody to task and made sure that those different aspects of the war game were kept and done and executed correctly. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for growth in training master gunners, integrating them into the planning process so that we can maximize their use. Specifically now, I'd like to transition a little bit. Master gunners are the kings and queens of ammunition management at home station. What are your experiences for managing ammunition at home station? And then how does that translate to managing ammunition in large-scale combat operations?
So I was the squadron master gunner before I'd gone to Bradley. I was Common Corps complete, and I was immediately thrown into being the squadron master gunner. I had an 89 Bravo, an ammo specialist, and I was able to effectively manage all of our training, the land, the ammo, without having to be completely sucked into those fights, having to go to all the land meetings, having to go to all the ammo briefs. All I had to do was essentially manage training. What are the training events we're doing? How many elements are firing? What echelon is firing? I could plug it into my calculator, give the numbers for ammo to the 89 Bravo, and he submitted everything in TAMIS. He coordinated everything with our distro. Same for land. I would talk to the troop commanders. I would sit in on training meetings. What training did they have coming up? Look at quarterly training meetings, identify what land we would need, and then I would coordinate that through our land NCO. It was great because I had all the time to be able to go down to the troops, and we were able to talk gun theory. We were able to essentially reinforce training, identify gaps, and I had the time to do that. Now, serving as a squadron master gunner in an armor brigade combat team, I was not able to effectively do that because I was running the land and the ammo myself. I'm sitting in 2-3 hour long quarterly training briefs for land, you know, or I could have been developing section live fires, platoon live fires, scenarios. We ended up getting a new squadron, essentially staff and team, and they got me a land NCO and an ammo NCO, and that allowed me to kind of step back. And so I think getting back into it, like, that's kind of what we need, is master gunners freed up from being the single point of failure for land and ammo to be able to get out and spread that knowledge.
How did your experiences at home station with ammunition management translate to how the squadron managed ammunition while at their CTC rotation?
Having an understanding of what each vehicle's combat load would be, we also had it in our TAC SOP, which made it pretty easy to go off of. So I already had a cheat sheet that I could use. I think one of the interesting things is we don't get a full combat load per vehicle. The amount of ammunition that you have, how long you're going to be firing for, which in this case, we're going to have, you know, an offense or a zone reconnaissance, and then we're going to go into a screen, so essentially a defense. And then how many operational and firing vehicles do we have, and then just divvy it up. If it's less than a combat load, I prefer to give it to all the vehicles. If we had more than a combat load, then we can actually get down to exercising resupply operations, and we can kind of stress like the distros and the FSCs. But I think it made it a lot easier being like the sole ammo manager to be able to just look at how much ammo we were getting and divvy that out.
How did you get visibility on the things that help you with that prioritization of ammunition? Did you receive logistical common operational picture information? Where did you get that data to be able to go ahead, again, prioritize that very important class five for the unit?
I was lucky. We had a really good team of master gunners throughout the brigade. All the battalion master gunners, we all worked together. We also worked very closely with the SPO, with our ammo chief and our ammo team. We communicated on a daily basis. And at Santa Fe, we were all pretty close together. So it was pretty easy to get those numbers. I've been pretty lucky. All of my distros have been absolutely amazing. And so they've been able to handle like, hey, this is where we're going. This is what we're taking. And if there's any issues, we could squash it right then and there. We could get the correct information out there. But you have to get out there. You have to maintain constant communication with your distro, with brigade ammo, you know, in some cases with your S4. But I think that's what it takes.
You had a great opportunity to perform those for the squadron. And as we've all seen out here, it becomes difficult to execute that, maintaining communication with those key nodes that are spread across the battlefield, from your field trains command post to the combat trains command post. And then how do we ensure a common sight picture between companies and battalions? So again, you can perform that recommendation to the commander in conjunction with the S4. Sergeant Ohano or Sergeant Aguilar, what about your observations and experiences from home station ammunition management training to managing it here inside of a large scale combat operation?
Yes, sir. So communication for me was the key friction points that I saw. Once again, was you had to be able to understand what you had available to forecast out of, and communicating with the other battalions to ensure that we can cross load ammunition within each other. If we didn't have enough, for example, enough impact rounds or certain Bradley rounds, that we would communicate consistently to make sure that we were even across the board. And that translated to large scale combat operations, because there were some battalions that knew what they had coming, what other battalions were doing. So we were able to cross load ammunition within the battalions based on what we forecasted to satisfy the needs of that battalion. And then once again, forecasting ahead of time, it's also key, and they come short when it comes to ammunition here at the National Training Center.
That's a great point. Difficult and part of the science that you provide commanders as they work through their course of action development of how many rounds it will actually take to destroy a set number of enemy vehicles in a specific operational environment. And again, how do we harness your education and training to provide that expertise at the right time in the right place with the right data streams to allow you to do it? At the National Training Center, we see that master gunners can provide opportunities for commanders to increase, but we have to get repetitions on training them to be integrated into those different planning sessions to enable that from the master gunner community. The thing that master gunners also help out and are the most knowledgeable on is how do we make our weapon systems lethal in an austere environment? What are your experiences in best practices and maximizing building lethality in live fire systems in reception staging and onward integration?
To me, that has to be second nature. And I think that's something that I emphasized religiously when I was an OC in the Scorpion team. It should be something that the soldiers should consider just as important as them getting class one. As soon as they are up and ready to go in the morning, sir, that should be the first thing. And then that's something that I emphasize, is to make sure that they have a good board set on their miles or on their actual weapon system. And I think that it all starts with that. A lot of people just think it's, you know, I board sight once and it should be good enough. Practice practice and repetitions is the key. That's what's been making the vehicles lethal here, especially for the battalions that have been successful. I think the units that are lacking of being lethal are the ones that just oversee that. They don't think it's as important.
What I would say, you can tell how cohesive a team is by the way they communicate out here. Though not just because Sergeant DaCosta is our master gunner, but I will say that when his brigade came through, they had a great group of master gunners that were constantly communicating, covering down on each other. But I think effective communication and them having standards across the brigade really helped them out during their rotation when it came to building combat power. But I do think that, sir, it comes with having standards, like Sergeant DaCosta said, and having a cohesive team that communicates and looks out for each other. Because when you're at home station, usually what a battalion master gunner is doing is one platoon at a time. And now you're coming out here to the National Training Center, you have what you have. And it's all about setting conditions before you execute. As a master gunner, you need those tools and those resources in order for you to be successful, just like in the book, the TC3-20.31 Master Gunner Range Box that has everything in there that you need. They teach you the stuff in the schoolhouse, and sometimes people kind of forget that they can go back and refresh themselves on what doctrine says. But there's a lot of tools that can definitely help you out, not only at home station, but out here at the National Training Center as well.
You're right. All those things that you gentlemen are helping to build at home station and have referenced are the things that will make crews more lethal out here. Sergeant DaCosta, I'm curious on your observations, field bore sight procedures that you've seen. What are things that your units are doing successful out here? And then how are they maximizing bore sighting inside of a austere environment?
Sir, I think one of the things, you know, just kind of going back to like my experience as a platoon sergeant in an ABCT, when I first took my platoon, none of our bore sight devices worked for the Bradley. And it took a long time to get them turned in and get new ones. Once we did, we were a lot better off. But like you said, in a land operation where dispersion is the key to essentially survival, you have to be able to self-sustain. And getting your equipment fixed and getting your equipment right, I think, is one of the first ways to get after that. In terms of field bore sighting, you know, you're on such a tight timeline for your gun line. You know, there's not always time to go back and re-bore sight. So you have to get creative with it. You know, collimation and zeroing, you know, getting after that. In GST, some people kind of overlook that. And if there's not the standards and discipline that Dragon 40 was talking about, you're going to run into a lot of problems, and all of those problems will get exposed at NTC when you're shooting and you're not hitting the threat that you're engaging, whether that's with live rounds or with miles. So I think having, you know, your master gunner toolbox, having your tools, having somebody with the knowledge and experience on the ground to teach all that prior to coming to NTC, you're essentially limited to your imagination.
Getting back on that, sir, when we're talking about dispersion and then mastering your craft and having to bore sight and do all these things, there are alternate methods to bore sighting where you don't need MBDs. I'm not saying it's the preferred method, but just getting down there, getting in the book and reading the different ways that you can bore sight, what you can bore sight off of, using the string method. There's ways to do things. It's just that we need to be able to train and get proficient at these alternate methods at home station. And I don't know how many people actually think about that being out here at the National Training Center. You know, maybe 3rd Platoon has like 3 good working MBDs and 1st Platoon only has 1. We think that we're going to be right next to 3rd Platoon or 2nd Platoon, the entire field problem. And then we find ourselves a couple clicks away during rotation, don't know what to do when it comes to bore sighting without an MBD because we weren't proficient at it before we came to the National Training Center. So I think those are just like the small things, sir, that can help units out before they come out here, especially like how to operate in a field environment without all the resources that you're going to need. So, you know, operating degraded shouldn't only be on the range firing without an LRF or stabilization. You can practice trying to master your craft without having all the essentials that you would like to have when it comes to getting ready for combat operations.
I think the air and barrel checks as well during LFAS zero, you know, but generally you'll only see like the master gunners, the tank master gunners with them. I feel like that could be a standard that, you know, you have in your mod golf toolbox, but also that something that platoons have when you're that dispersed, where if you need to make an update, you can do that as a platoon.
That's a great point, because the benefit of the National Training Center is that you get your 40-degree temperature swings. So you'll see the difference if you don't have a current air and barrow. It's a great training environment to go ahead and pound those different lessons home. So First Class Neat, how about your experience on maximizing the lethality and preparations before combat that you've seen in the BEB and the sustainment units that have come through?
I see that the preparation that BEBs and BSBs are most likely doing is the equipment they're actually bringing out. So When it comes to engineers, they're going to ensure that their teams and squads are qualified within maneuver elements, making sure they have the proper weapon systems. Their logistics, they got to support the fight. So they want to ensure that their equipment is ready to transport all ammunition safely and accurately throughout this rotation. I think that that's where their main focus is. Logistics for the BSB, as in engineers, they're preparing to support maneuver. So just ensuring that they're demo qualified and their small caliber weapon systems are accurately zeroed and ready to fight.
The last one that we'll talk over in terms of TTPs from field craft or at least execution perspective is National Training Center provides us a lot of opportunity to fire many rounds in support of an offensive and defensive operation. We're going to do semi-ready to ready transitions, and we're going to resupply from crew, platoon, battalion, and brigade level. What are the things that we're seeing as successful for units and TTPs to work those transitions and resupply of Class 5 during execution?
I think some of the things I've seen, sir, that have been successful is that communication between the master gunners and the FSC and the first sergeant specifically to make sure that that's ran down in a way that makes sense and it's common depending on where they're at in the battlefield. I think a lot of the units are not considering that in their planning sometimes, where they are now in needing of Class 5 and now they're wondering how they're going to go about resupplying as opposed to units that prepare and that are ready and they know where to go and how to get their resupplies back from the FSC. So I think communication, I think, is the key here between the FSC and the companies and the battalion to make sure that they're successful across the board.
I think maybe your log syncs need to be spot on, your S4 and how they're going to work the resupply, the first sergeants where they're at. I know, especially for the CAV squadron, where your locks are generally a lot more extended, I think, than some of the other battalions might be. It becomes especially difficult, and the S4 does not have an easy task in developing that. You know, exactly like getting with your master gunner, like how are you going to best give the ammunition to the right platoons, to the right troops? How are the first sergeants going to facilitate that? And I think having that open line of communication with everybody will make that a lot smoother. Understanding when are your log stats due, sending up accurate log stats so that you can determine the correct amount of ammunition to distro. Because I know that oftentimes log stats are not sent up in time, so you don't end up getting the resupply that you need in the time that you need it.
That's a great point. And these are all things that I think master gunners can integrate into home station training. So something as small as, hey, I've got to transition my ammunition from the semi-ready to ready, we can incorporate in our home station training and our home station gunnery train-ups to be able to get after that, because it takes, under pressure and the heat while the enemy's bearing down on you, some experience to do it quickly and efficiently. And then as you described, how and what are the ways that we're resupplying ourselves? Is it a standard set package? Are we going back to a specific area? And then have we done the science that you provide on how much are we going to need to destroy that enemy or suppress them for a 30-40 minute period while we're executing a complicated breach operation? These are all things that we've seen out here in rotational units that have challenges with, and again, opportunities for us to integrate into home station training.
Absolutely, sir. And I've seen a few of the brigades that came through their gun sops, and some of the gun sops definitely have those configurations of ammunition that you're talking about, depending on the type of threat that you're facing. So I think just having a gun sop, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're going on, you know, hour 27 of no sleep, and you're seeing all kinds of craziness at night. You have the tac sop there, you have the gun sop there that, hey, we've already done the math under, you know, level-headedness, here it is, and we can execute this easily, you know, assist greatly with the success of that.
That's a great point. Good standard operating procedures allow non-commissioned officers to execute their job and ensure soldiers are prepared for the next fight.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to pivot a little bit into that is, what are your observations as master gunners about the role that you play in maintaining and developing a unit training plan to support maximum lethality in large-scale combat operations?
I think first and foremost, depending on what echelon you're at, having a great relationship with your counterpart. So as a battalion master gunner, I had an awesome S3. He was outstanding. He had complete trust in me. So whenever he asked for recommendations or needed my advice, he would always ask me and always take it. And I was able to show him, you know, certain things that maybe he was overlooking. It doesn't matter how many times you look at it, you're going to see something one way. And if you get another set of eyes to kind of help you out, whatever it is, you know, where you can save some time, where you should spend a little bit more time might be the difference between a soldier mastering his ox sight or learning, you know, something about, you know, going degraded or whatever the case may be.
I will say, sir, my experience, you know, having to fight for lethality, oftentimes battalions, brigades, cav squadrons will neglect section live fires, fighting not to skip echelons of live fire. You know, my experience, and I've seen it here at the CTC, speaking with the master gunners, asking kind of what their train up look like. And I think you lose a lot of lethality by not training your sections. You know, you lose a lot of experience by not going through section tables 1 through 6. Oftentimes that's neglected for the sake of time. You have to fight as a master gunner to find that time. And sometimes the time isn't there. It's just a matter of getting out there and finding it and then, you know, briefing that to your three, briefing that to your battalion commander, your squadron commander. And I think that that doesn't start in the middle of your training density. You know, that starts months out with the long range training calendar. And what does our training look like? And if you don't fight for the training, then that training is not going to happen. And then you're going to have undertrained units coming here. And I think something else is a lot of the ranges and a lot of different installations are not really fit to essentially fight your sections and platoons the way that you would, I think, at a large scale ground combat operations. And we see that here with vehicles and their spacing, or you're used to scanning headlight to headlight during crew gunnery and getting your soldiers and your crews away from scanning like that. Someone's got to have rear security. You know, who's that going to be? And enforcing it. But yeah, just getting back to, you have to fight for it.
Sorry, if I may, I think one of the ways we can also get after that is, I think in home station, we are so focused into like the gunnery aspect of the whole thing when it comes to lethality about table 6 scores and stuff like that. Me personally, I would rather take a Q2 crew that fought through it, learn from it, than taking a crew that did well. And they, you know, they can come to NTC, because when you come to a like place like the National Training Center, it's not a bowling alley anymore like it's in gunnery. And I think that's the mentality that a lot of garrison training has behind it, is just that gunnery mindset, and not realizing that when you come to like a place like National Training Center, you have other things tactically that you need to worry about that you don't otherwise see in doing the gunnery operations. I think also jump crews is a big thing to have for lethality. When I say that story, it's because we are losing crews constantly. I don't think I've seen a crew last more than maybe 10 months before they get broken up, and now you have to retrain other crews knowing that your time is very limited. And I think cross training is another big thing. Those loaders, those drivers from the Bradleys or whatever, they need to start getting trained on early when it comes to like gunnery aspect, how to be a gunner, how to be a TC way ahead of time. I think you should already been learning that job as you were coming up, because again, you have time constraints. And then also just prioritizing the training. I think once we do gunnery and home station, we kind of forget about the training has to continue. You know, you're not just going to learn anything in 1 month and then you think you're going to be an expert. You know, I know there's red cycle taskings that we have to do and worry about, but I think it just has to be enforced, and I think we lose sight of that. Adding all those things together will make a lethal unit.
I do want to piggyback off of what Sergeant Aguilar said, because one of the biggest things that we see is when it comes time for gunnery, that's when everyone's locked in. You can go print out the sim hours months before that, and you're not really going to see much in there. But as soon as we get within close to T6, now we're running 24-hour operations when we could have been doing this during our sustainment phase after gunnery. So when it comes time for you to do your gates of live fire, you already met all the prerequisites at tables because you've been doing it, whatever your SOP is. That's why those training plans are very important. And then the training that we do, especially with the jump crews, because you already have your leaders identified. It's never a bad thing to like, hey, you can go get in the simulator with this guy. This is potentially going to be your gunner. Or hey, even if it's not going to be, you're still getting some time in the simulator. We talked about it earlier. Those good battle rhythm meetings with everybody, because one way to synchronize everything and communicate is through those training resource meetings that you have with your S4, with the XOs, whoever the representatives are from each company, your distro, making sure that everyone is tracking who has what ranges, what type of ammunition available for them this month. And it's just knowing those little things and having good communication and good relationships across the brigade so you can always have a win and always have an answer for your commander when he looks over the training plan and would like, hey, can we do some machine gun training during this training period? It's all about communicating with everyone else outside your battalion and even sometimes outside your brigade. Having that communication can definitely go a long ways instead of trying to squeeze things in because we don't have time to do it. Well, guess what? They kind of did it for us. And now we're finding different ways to accomplish the task that we need in order to be successful before we reach collective training.
And sir, one thing, if I may, last thing. I think, for example, when I was platoon sergeant, you have to find ways around what is already laid out on the training schedule if you know you have time in your hands at a platoon level. One example for me would be, depending on what we had going on, I would take my 4 tanks to the TA when I was in Fort Cavazos. That gave me an opportunity to do a few things, is to be able to practice my logistical reports, because I did have the backup from the company. I would kind of lock in those 2 days for my platoon to go out. It will give my platoon leader and myself an opportunity to practice those things. We don't practice so much during gunnery. Asking those things that you see all the time at the National Training Center that you know that some of the platoon sergeants and platoon leaders are lacking. So I think you have to kind of think outside the box, and yes, there is a training schedule set to do certain tasks. But if you have the opportunity, like I used to do and take my tanks out to the TA when I had, like, I know I had 2 days that were going to be pretty easy and my whole platoon can knock out tasks real quick, then that's what I would do. And it will give me, again, those repetitions as a platoon sergeant and PO to practice our movement and maneuver, our spacing, our dispersion, because we know those are the problems that we see out here at the National Training Center.
I think one of the big things that I've seen, sir, is, you know, crew stabilizations. I think that there's been some units that have come through, at least, you know, the 6-7 rotations that I've been here for, where crews are broken just before coming to the NTC for various reasons. A lot of it has been soldiers PCSing before their unit deploys. And I think one of the ways you can get after that is stabilizing your crew. And I know that that happened with us. We did have a few crews that broke due to PCS. Had we stabilized the crews coming out of gunnery, I think we would have been better off. Some of that cannot be helped, but I think most of it can be. And then knowing IWITs, understanding what the condemnation criteria is for each echelon, for each formation type, forecasting your personnel and assigning crews based off of who has longevity, considering crew management. If you have to move a crew or a single person to another platoon, another crew, or another troop, consider moving that crew together. I think also what we've seen is they're not as healthy on their qualifications, you know, as maybe the commanders may have thought. And I think a lot of that goes back to, you know, having good communication with your commanders. Hey, sir, this will break a crew. You know, getting after that in your D-30 briefs, your D-60 briefs.
As the team that manages, reviews, and advises the commander of operations group on live fire certifications and qualifications, what feedback would you give to the force on what you've observed for condemnation issues?
Yeah, so it was going back to what I was saying before, and I think it needs to continue to be practiced. I think jump crews can help, right? So I think even if you don't think you're going to need them, if you have the ammunition and the time to do it. Because when you have platoon sergeants or somebody that leaves, it's kind of hard to replace with the jump crew, obviously. But like Sandra Costa was saying, moving the gunner and the TC combination, if they're moving together. But I think jump crews is a big thing that can be facilitated with condemnation criteria when it comes to that kind of stuff. Also knowing that the commander has options, that if there's a crew that breaks up and, you know, you have something like National Training Center coming up in about a month, that, you know, you can mitigate that with simulator time and good stuff like that, that will actually make that crew ready to go and not be condemned. There's more range time, more ammunition time. I get it. But I also think it'll keep your unit healthier with manpower.
Gentlemen, I really appreciate your insight from the Dragon team and as the Master Gunners, because, again, you provide a lot of feedback to our Army and to the people that are training large portions of our Army, not just here at the National Training Center, but at home station. Again, we appreciate your time. We hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, our observer coach trainers are here to assist units. I invite you to look at our Meal Suite page for the latest products from Operations Group and subscribe to the Operations Group TAC Talks on YouTube for short lessons and successful techniques. Thank you for listening to Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of Operations Group at the National Training Center.